This is the Ben Ryan Podcast.
For today's show, I chat to an athlete who's just returned from her first Olympic Games, open water swimmer Alice Deering. When we met in a small park in Camberley in the south of England, she was still unpacking all of what she's been through from being part of the hugely successful Team GB to her first Olympic final and how she would approach it again. It was fascinating to listen to her talk about all of that, how she deals with the ridiculously early morning training and volume, as well as the sheer danger involved in swimming in open water. Alice is also Great Britain's first female black swimmer, and we talk about that as we close our chat, but we start with me asking her how she's dealing with her time off and not being in a strict regime.
It does feel quite nice to break the routine, I'm not going to lie. As much as like we need routine in our life, you just need to take a step back from it sometimes, and especially the amount of pressure and stress that you put yourself under to make sure those routines are perfect. So when you get to the start line or on the playing field, everything, like, you can trust in yourself that everything's gone right. So yeah, to take that step back is definitely, I mean, we've seen a lot of athletes do it, especially with the mental health issues which some athletes go through. So it's nice that people are discussing this. It's becoming more visible, because when I was growing up through sport, I didn't see any of this, didn't hear any of this. You never really knew an athlete's process. You only knew that they worked hard. And, you know, when you get to that stage and you suddenly realise there are literally so many people who put time and effort into your career, into your life, into your experience, that's when you, like, suddenly realise it's not just a one-person thing. It's, like, 10, 20, 30 people, especially in an individual sport. I mean, I can't imagine what a team sport's like.
Do you value the people that are working around you?
Absolutely love the people I'm working with. Love working with my coach. So, and honestly, I've only actually really felt like I've experienced it this season just gone. We've had like a load of new athletes, like international athletes, who had done like the state system.
Yeah.
And they came through to us. And I'm not trying to bash like British swimmers or the British culture within, I don't know, individual sport, but the energy that they brought is just so much higher than anything I've ever experienced being a British swimmer. And I've only ever swam in Britain, only ever gone through British clubs. And what I always realise with the international athletes, they're always just so happy to be there. And the little things that you take for granted, like with training and things like that, I mean, they're all incredible athletes. Like Felix Olbeck, for example, he made the final in the 4, 8 and 15 at the Olympics just gone, and he's always just so happy, and he's just such a great person to train with. And I suddenly looked around and realized I was in a really nice and happy, positive group. And like, I have felt this before, but it kind of ebbs, especially with swimming, as people come and go, because the team's never constant. You obviously get different personalities coming through it. And so when you're in that position where you suddenly realise you're surrounded by so many great people, you realise it and you thrive off of it. And, you know, I've had the best training I've had this season. I'm really happy I found myself in a place like that, and I long may it continue for Loughborough Swimming.
Yeah, it's brilliant to hear that, because if you just think about your guiding principle for me is like, do you wake up with a bit of a spring in your... Now, maybe it's a bit harder at 4 or 5 in the morning, but generally you're looking forward to going in and you're excited.
Yeah.
Is that what you would see as being a good kind of yardstick for working in a good environment?
Definitely, yeah. I've definitely felt that this season and even the previous few seasons. But you see it with other people as well. You can see who wants to be there. And I'm not going to lie, I've never always been the person who wanted to be there. There were quite a few times I didn't want to be there, wasn't enjoying training, was struggling. Maybe it was a bit of to do with squad members. Maybe just, you know, sometimes you just don't connect with people. It's just normal. And then struggling with the training. And yeah, I tried my hardest to hide that fact. But it's so hard to hide, especially in a sport like swimming, where you're there 9-10 times a week. And, you know, you might want to turn up to one of those sessions, but the other like 9 times it's forced and it's hard. And so to have like made that switch to being the swimmer that wants to be there, I suddenly get it. And honestly, when I was younger, I never understood it. Like when people were like, oh no, I want to be here, I want to be training, I honestly didn't get it. And that's like really truthful from me, because it's hard, it's difficult. You know, you, like you said, we're up 4 or 5 in the morning doing 2-hour sessions, going to school, going to uni, coming back and doing that again in the evening with gym on top of it. And I never really got it. I was like, I know I need to train to be better. I completely get that. But I never thought training could be fun. And like it sometimes I really enjoyed it, sometimes I didn't, and I've ebbed in and out of it, and I just think I found myself in a place where I actually understand it now at the grand old age of 24, where I've been swimming for 16 years in a competitive environment, and sometimes I've loved it and sometimes I've hated it throughout all those 16 years, and I think I've arrived at a place where I finally get it.
Could you kind of sum up what, when you've got that extra energy in the program that hasn't necessarily been created by you but by the collective, everyone else, is there anything you can give an example of how that helps?
Yeah, I think it's like, it's little things like seeing your teammates absolutely smash a training session, and maybe you've got an easy one that day, and then the next day you're like, oh, if they're doing that, I can do that. Like, this, like, it's a good environment, you know, like everyone's swimming fast, everyone's happy, the mood's light, and it just makes things so much easier, you know, when we've got like a stupidly long or boring set, which as a distance swimmer you just have to do, that's just the inevitable. Being able to laugh about it with your teammate rather than like self-pitying. And there, sometimes there is self-pity involved, but then we always turn it into like a joke afterwards and just like maybe poke fun at the coach and be like, oh, could you not have thought of something more exciting? Like, I think one time he gave us like 8 500s after like a long warm-up, and then like I think we had a long swim down after it, so it was just like a massive 4K block, and it was like, could you not have thought of something better, Andy? But like, he just laughs and goes, oh, you just got to do it, and we're just like, yeah, we know. So, but like, it's one of those things where we know it's light, it's jokey, it's fun, and just like enjoy the experience whilst you've got it, because obviously like you suddenly realize it's not going to last forever. And like I'm so focused on going to Paris now, but then after that I'm not really sure. So if I only have 3 years left in the sport, which is just a fraction of what I've done already, so I just want to make the most of it.
Paris obviously is only 3 years away, only 3 years. There's, yeah, there's a lot of miles and kilometres, yeah, that you're going to be doing all sorts, because you were doing, what, 2 hour sessions coming into the Olympics?
Yeah.
Is it like a set of, am I right in saying like 10 sessions of 2 hours? Is that
pretty much, yeah, yeah. It was like 9/10 sessions and then 2 gym sessions on top of it. But my gym was never anything super big or super heavy. It's all like shoulder stability and core work, because, you know, for the amount of miles that I'm putting through my body, I've just got to make sure it's like...
It's about 70K a week or something like that?
Yeah, about 60, yeah, wow. 60K a week. Yeah, it gets hard, it gets long. But like I said, just having the people next to you knowing that they're doing it as well.
And I'm always intrigued when athletes that are in more of the endurance events and they've got like 2 hours. Training, I suppose, is different from competition. But if Adam Peaty, I think, talked about how, you know, you're staring down a black line, you know, from a huge amount of your week.
Yeah.
He likes it, and he's got very comfortable with that as far as the you know, the mental side of it. Is that, do you think about, you know, going online and buying something, or what you're going to do at the weekend, or are you very much like each stroke?
So yeah, with training, honestly, I think it's healthy to have a bit of both. So you have to be able to switch in and switch onto your stroke and know what things feel like. But honestly, with the amount of meters I do, I think it'd be very unhealthy to do that for every stroke and for every length. So I am like miles away. Sometimes I'm thinking about the wildest things. You know, do you know when you make up like stupid like stories in your head of like, if someone said this to me, what would I say back to them? And just unnecessary like drama in your head that would never happen in real life. I do a bit of that. I do think about like what I'm having for dinner, what I'm going to do when I get home, what video games I'm going to play, what am I going to watch? And honestly, yeah, I do it. Like, it is a bit of a mix of everything, that then, especially for the key sessions, that's when it's like, okay, no, we need to concentrate. You need to practice like being in that mindset for your race. But for those sessions where it'll just be like 5 or 6K of like just kind of swimming
volume,
yeah, just volume, like just getting the meters in, just, you know, swimming for those ones, yeah, it's very difficult to stay in tune for the whole thing, and I honestly wouldn't recommend it, because it makes it feel so much longer. And you know, I'm very much an advocate for switch off when you need to switch off, and if you're able to switch off in a swimming session and just enjoy like being by yourself, yeah, for a little bit, then I say do that, because you know, the environment I work in is so pressurized and so intense that when you get those few, like those 2 hours a week where you can just swim and not have to think about much.
You've said on numerous occasions that there are times that you weren't feeling it,
yeah,
and your mum got your mum got involved.
Yeah.
Do you think without her doing that, do you think you wouldn't be sitting on a park bench talking about just having gone to Olympic Games?
I think so, yeah, honestly. She put as much effort into my swimming as I did, and probably more at certain times when I needed her to. And then, you know, when I finally got old enough to manage it by myself, that she can just take a step back and chill out and just, like, enjoy watching
not
me succeed.
Not take you to training at, five in the morning?
Oh, one of the earliest wake-up we had whilst I was growing up was 3:55 a.m. And, you know, when you just, like, you say that out loud.
Yeah.
And you realise, like, that's some people just, like, ending their night. Like, obviously, like, on a night out. Not an elite athlete.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
What was your alarm sound at 3:55? Did you have a really, like, nasty one? Like, that's really one of those, you know, ones that just shakes your bones? Or was it a comforting, relaxing one?
It was like the din, 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 din. Do you know the one on, I think it's Marimba?
Is it on your phone?
Yeah, it's like the iPhone one. Oh, I had it on my iPhone.
Yeah, it's Marimba or something. Yeah, yeah.
That, and to this day, like,
what does that do to you now if that goes off?
Do you hear someone's ringtone? And you're just like, why is that your ringtone? I'm sorry. Like, I can't process it. No offense if anyone's like, if that's a ringtone, but, like, it brings back such memories in me. I just can't. I can't have it. I don't know. I don't even know what my alarm is at the moment, but I feel like I'm at a better place with it.
Do you need I took my partner Michelle often has to get out really early for some of the stuff she does, and she needs a nice comforting start point, because that's your bookend, the beginning of your day.
Yeah, you don't want to.
She'd really annoy me because I wasn't bothered about it, and so I'd hit a default one, and it'd be a horrible noise, like that really gets into your brain, and it really got. I mean, she was not happy. Is it important for that, your first 5 or 10 minutes when you wake up? Do you need to get your day off well for that? And does it affect the rest of your day?
God, I don't know. I think those first few minutes, it's never too deep. But it's normally like sometimes, like, even, do you know, like, yeah, just have a bad drive, like, to training or something. And, like, I don't know, like, someone annoys you on the road, or you, like, question whether you should have gone when you did at a junction. And, like, I overthink, like, loads of little things like that, and it's not relevant at all. And, you know, I'll forget about it 3 days later. But sometimes I get to training, I'll just feel, like, down about, like, driving. And I'm not, please don't get me wrong, I'm not a bad driver, you know. Like, I'm not, like, whipping around Loughborough, like, getting beeped at by everybody. But, you know, it's little things like that that I just, like, I tend to overthink, especially, like, early in the morning. And then I think that's where training helps, where, like, swimming helps. You know, you've got something else to put your mind onto and concentrate on, and, you know, switch off from whether I should have done uni work yesterday and I didn't do it, and it means I've got more to do today, but, you know, I'll manage it. So, I think those first 5 or 10 minutes I'm never too worried about, but it's like the following hour is what I need to focus on.
What about race days? Any different?
Oh, God, race days, just like nerves, just pure nerves.
Did you
nerves.
Sleep well night before?
I did in Tokyo, actually, which is quite surprising, because we were up. I woke
You're
up
in
at
the village.
3:30. Yeah, I was
Sharing.
In the village. Yeah, it was quite cute. We shared, like, the open water team shared. So myself, Hector Pardo, Bernie Deitzeg, the open water lead, and Hayley Baker, the coach. We all shared together in a flat, which was quite cute, because I just said, like, oh, we're like a little family, you know, you've got mum, dad, and the two kids. It was just nice. It was just we all got on so well, and I really enjoyed it. I missed them quite a bit, actually, because, you know, I spent 2 weeks straight with them, like, day in, day out, seeing them. And then, you know, you leave and suddenly it's like, it's quite weird, isn't it? You're suddenly not hanging around these people all day every day. But it was nice. But yeah, we were up at 3:30. And
your race was 6:30.
6:30 diving, yeah.
Because it was so hot, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to try and get it as cool as possible, but also slightly reasonable. But I think I coped with that quite fine. That didn't stress me out too much at all, you know. It was one of those things, I only had to do it once, so I could cope with it. But I mean, if that was back-to-back days, that would have been difficult.
I was going to just pick you up on that, because sometimes in my world for sports, like say take rugby sevens, if you've got a tournament and you've looked at the timetable and you've gone, oh, there's an 8 o'clock or a 9 o'clock start, or maybe there's a 9 o'clock in the evening start, some coaches will do a prep for it. So they'll go, right, okay, let's get the team into the routine where they're getting up early to have their 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock game, or they're staying in late to do. And I'm never quite sure about that, because sometimes they do it quite close to the tournament, you're fatiguing them unnecessarily, and it might not help, and it might send some negative emotions, because if you do it the one-off time and the adrenaline's pumping for the actual race or the tournament,
exactly, it doesn't matter.
It's
interesting, because I'm really fortunate with open water or marathon swimming that it's one and done. So, you know, I look at the pool swimming, the athletics, got even a rugby tournament and football tournaments, you know, these are back-to-back moments where you're putting yourself under loads of pressure, which I suppose in a way is nice because you get multiple opportunities, hopefully. But then with open water, it's like, okay, just all of your energy into this one swim, into this one time, and then you're done, and you can just, like, the pressure's gone, you can just relax. And so like my mindset's very much attuned to that now, where I look at pool competitions and, you know, the swimming at Tokyo was 8 days, I think. I just looked at it and I was like, I did a 3-day competition, pool competition in Manchester in January or February, I can't remember. And I was exhausted. I just couldn't believe, like, I was like, I have to go to the pool again. I've got to swim again. And it was a real big shock, because I haven't done it properly in a while. And so, you know, it's just, I want to try and qualify for commies. So it's just something I'm going to have to, like, get used to again, because I used to do it fine. But it was just quite a weird one to experience after, you know, open water swimming. It's like you turn up, you race, you go home, you know, like one day, one morning. Yeah, it's done.
But you will also have, in a long race, it's 2 hours, you'll have some things that go right and go wrong.
Yeah.
You know, so how do you say, I don't know, not something as obvious perhaps, but I did watch one of the races, and I was watching the turns, and one of the swimmers, I think it was in Doha, I was watching one of them, and one of the swimmers kind of hit the boy. Like, they were swimming hard, and like they hit it. Like, and then they had to recover, and they lost a few seconds. How do you get rid of, like, for you, negative stuff that happens in a race? Can it quickly disappear and you're back on task, or do you hang on to that negativity?
Yeah, I think it's always about moving on to your next opportunity, and, like, both within swimming and in life, but definitely marathon swimming, you know, you got 2 hours, you got a lot of time to fix things, and I think that's why I like it so much. I've never been a very precise person. It sounds really stupid, but I struggle to follow. I was talking to my brother yesterday, and, you know, he can cook really well, and he's like, all you do is follow instructions. And I was like, I can't do it. Like, I'm like, I know I need to add a bit of this, I need to add a bit of that, I need to use, like, previous experience. And, like, I find it really difficult to just be like, to just follow instruction. I know it sounds really bad, and really, obviously if, like, it was something super important, I would, but, you know, for, like, following a recipe, I like to, like, rely on previous experience. And I think that's why I like open water and marathon swimming, is because all you can rely on is your previous experience. You've got to think about that, you've got to think about, like, you know, where your body's at, and use everything at your disposal. And, you know, there's never a set recipe for making an open water swim happen. Things will go right, things will go wrong, things will go right where you didn't expect them to go right, things will go wrong when you expected them to go right, and vice versa. So it's all about managing your energy and your mind at that moment, and just trying to pick yourself up for the next chance to, you know, either, like, overtake somebody, move around the pack, get around the buoy well. It's a very, like, that's how I approach it anyway. So I'm sure some other athletes would just approach it as, like, just go for it, you know.
For the marathon, men's and women's swimming, there's a really interesting statistic that the finalists for the men's and women's, and this is each Olympic, have more athletes that have got masters or PhDs than any other sports final in the Olympic Games.
No way.
Yeah. Did you know that?
I'm proud of that.
I'm giving you another bit of stat there.
I know what.
You know, and I thought, I wonder if it's because one of the things is they can get their head down and work hard.
Yeah. Honestly, it makes sense. It's one of those things where, like, it's going to sound so arrogant, but you do have to be quite smart to do a marathon swim, because there's so much going on within it. And I know it just looks like we get in and swim and just, like, battle each other, and everyone's always like, oh, is it really physical? Honestly, it's not that physical. Like, especially at like the Olympic final, no one really wants to get into a fight because your energy that you get when you get into a scrap with someone is just wasted.
Like wrestling, probably.
Oh, yeah. Like, honestly, like, we don't need to do two sports. Like marathon swimming is hard enough as it is. We don't need to be doing, like, judo or taekwondo. You know, we don't need any of that. But, yeah, that's, like, a nice fact to hear because I'm studying masters myself and I just kind of did it because, like, I do really enjoy learning and I like learning new things. But, yeah, that's really cool.
Well, why don't we paint a picture then? Because... And I'd love, at some point, I'll ask you about why open water. But the marathon event is 10 kilometres. Mm-hmm. Now, in the last, again, for the geeks amongst us, everyone thinks of swimming and they probably think of swimming in a pool. But the very first time the Olympics had swimming in 1896, it was open water. You know, and so open water swimming.
Me a lot today.
I'm trying, Alice. It was from 1896, open water has always been in the Olympics in some form. And is it a bit like BMX where if you can get away at the front, at the start, before that first mogul, you've got a really accelerated chance of success? Or is it really a cat and mouse thing over the 2 hours? Just under 2 hours, isn't it?
Yeah. This is an interesting one because this is where I think the men's and women's really differ. So we saw an example in the men's of Welbrock and Rozoski in Tokyo, who just went from it from the front, and they were able to do that. But then in the women's race, it was a lot more cat and mouse. So honestly, I think the men's race is going that way. It would just be interesting to see if the women's ever does. Personally, I don't race it like that. I like sit at the back and draft off everybody because I just kind of float along with it, especially being like one of the most petite on the start line. I can kind of sit behind anybody and just get dragged along.
There's no real shape like for open water. You could be tall and big or small and petite.
I think that's the beauty of it. Like you look at it, it's a very diverse start line, whereas in the pool, like with the 50 and the 100, that's the stark extreme. Yeah. Like you kind of have to be at least 5'10". I mean, Anna Hopkin is a great example of not being that, which I'm just so happy to see, because when I was growing up, it was kind of like you had to be tall to be like a 50 or 100 swimmer, and that's like the rock star dream, isn't it? But I'm trying to make open water a bit more
I'm sure in the Olympic dining rooms, like it's quite, I think I've talked about in this previous podcast, it's quite a good game to pick the sport an athlete walks in. And some of them are really obvious.
Yeah, basketball.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got crikey. There's so many that might be massive up top and then tiny legs, you know, or for different sports. Yeah. And if you're like a kayaker. But it's hard to pick a marathon runner, swimmer in that. You just...
Yeah, honestly, even sometimes I see us and like, because we change body shape quite often. I think a lot of the women slimmed out for this race because of the heat, kind of had no option to. Even for Europeans in 2018, that was a very cold swim. It was like 16 degrees, so like stark opposite to Tokyo. And I think I filled out for that because there was no way I was going to cope with it sitting at 52, 53 kilograms. We were in a wetsuit, but still I was like, I probably need a bit more fat on me. And I think a lot of the women did that as well. So it's a sport that requires quite a lot of like a holistic approach to your body, I think. You've got to be in tune with your mind, but also in tune with your, like, how your body's doing as well in many different elements. So, yeah, it's the diversity it brings to swimming is really, like, good because, like, everyone, like, in training one time, I was sprinting against one of my teammates, Will, and, like... He didn't beat me by that much. He beat me, don't get me wrong. He's a boy, he's going to beat me. But
I bet they don't always beat you, do they?
I don't know. It was close. And quite a lot of people were surprised at how fast I was. And I'm always just like, yes, you have to be fast in open water. Like, it is an endurance event. But when it comes down to that last, like, 100 metres or where you get into the finish funnel with the lame ropes, that is a pure sprint. And yes, it's how well your energy is and how well you've conserved it earlier, but you got to be quick. You ain't going to get there if you can't go like a decent 100 time. That's like a brutal fact about it. So I think people often misinterpret open water swimming, but you got to be speedy as well. It's like you got to be good at everything, basically.
And when I was looking at, watched your races and some of the stuff, obviously when you grew up you were in the pool and competing in the pool, but I haven't heard yet why you chose a sport where you can you jump in open water in potentially quite dangerous, a dangerous environment.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I know in the Olympic final there's 25 other swimmers, so you might have a feeling of safety amongst that, and there's safety boats and stuff. But you'll be going to some events where the safety might not be as rigorous, and the wind or the rain might be picking up, and the currents and anything else that might be in those waters. You mean your head can take you to wherever it wants to, I guess. Like in Sydney Olympics, when they did the triathlon on the open water, they were worried a little bit about, you know, sharks popping in, and they had different sonar and anti-sharks stuff that they were doing in the bay do you ever get worried about that? And what, like, why not stay in the pool?
Safety of the
pool. What was your reasoning to go into open water?
Honestly, I just kind of found I was all right at it. And I'm very much like, honestly, I'm out of my comfort with open water. I'm very much, you know, like those things do go through my head. And the way I rationalise it is, if those are the women and those are the men can get in, so can I. But then the problem is, if I ever do an open water swim and it's just me, that's where I freak
then?
Out. Because I'm like, no one else is in there. I don't know if it's safe. Like, so
that's, you do it still?
Not really, to be honest. I've done it once with, I was on holiday with my boyfriend and he was in the kayak. He was in a kayak next to me, but there was nobody else swimming in that area of water. And I was just like, I don't know if this is safe, like what's in this water, I can't see anything. And I freak out, honestly, I freak out, and I was screaming. And like this, like, you know, British like marathon swimmer trying to it's pretty bad, but that's kind of how I rationalize it, I suppose. You know, you turn up to a competition, other people are okay to swimming it, why can't I? And that's how I look at it. But I initially got into it because there's opportunities available in it. And I got my first marathon swim was a 10K in Portugal. And I got picked from it from my 400 and 800 time in the pool.
Okay.
And, you know, I was like, oh my God, it's a free trip to Portugal. Like, why am I going to say no to that? Blissfully unaware of what a marathon actually was. I never swam open water before, never even trained a session. And I was like, oh, I've done 8K in the pool before. A 10K, I'll be fine. And genuinely, it's like completely different. You know, you don't have the turns, you don't have anything to rest on. You're just swimming straight for 2 hours. And the water was like 14 degrees. It was freezing. I wasn't in a wetsuit. I was like 45 kilograms, like 15, 16 years old. I was tiny. I managed to finish the race, which is probably one of my proudest achievements, because it was pure mental. I cannot give in. And finished that. Got selected for European Juniors off the back of it. 5K in Turkey, you know, I'd be stupid to say no to that after what I've just done. I was promised it'd be warmer. Went there, did that, and I won it. And then since then, I was just like, I got picked from all teams because obviously they saw like some great potential in me. And, you know, it's just one of those things, like I got given opportunities and I didn't want to say no to them. You know, I've been to the most amazing places, seen the most amazing things. And, you know, I'm sat here talking to you because of like open water swimming and marathon swimming. So I just, you know, you see an opportunity and you roll with it and you take it. And no matter how hard it is and how far out of your comfort zone, I think it was all been worth it.
You've never used a sports psychologist, which, you know, there's no right or wrong. For some people, that they use different tools. Some people will never have used a nutritionist or a strength and conditioning coach or whatever it is. It's what you need at the right time. So where did you learn to have your own processes? Was it just you? Well, you tell me.
So I have actually started speaking to a sports psychologist at the start of the year. Her name's Andrea. She's great. But at the same time, she was like, she was kind of getting other vibes. Like, I don't think you need me that much. But like, it's just someone to chat to sometimes and just be like, this is what's going on. And I kind of like rant at her. And then she'll like formulate what I'm saying and say it back to me in a much more coherent and short way. So, the way I guess I got this mindset through, I think just swimming loads, and it sounds really like obvious and stupid, but you know, like after the amount of meters I've swam in my life, the amount of time that I've had with myself, and you know, the ups and downs I've been through, you know, I did nearly quit swimming in 2017. I lost my funding, I got kicked out of the National Centre, and like I'd hinged my self-worth and self-belief as a swimmer on those two things. Like, that was what I was really proud of. That was what made me think I was a good swimmer. And obviously those are two incredible like achievements. So that was why I thought I was a good swimmer. And, you know, I didn't perform well at World Championships and lost both of those things. And then I was kind of like, okay, well, I'm obviously not a good swimmer. What's the point in carrying this on? And this is where, like, I honestly don't know why I got back into swimming. I just started like training again, like firstly by myself, and then I moved to the university squad where I'm with Andy now, like my current coach. And, you know, I had one good training session and it just changed my mindset around it all. I was like, I'm just going to enjoy this again. I'm just going to learn to enjoy swimming again, because I've been really struggling with enjoying it. And, you know, got back into just training, you know, being around a much bigger group, a group where it's a bit more relaxed, there's less pressure on the training, and just enjoying it and going with the flow. And I think going through that struggle and that difficulty like really helped me understand my mindset around swimming, that it's not that deep. Like, it's, I know like everyone thinks like athletes and sport and stuff, you know, that this is my life and it's super important to me. Like, I want to be the best swimmer I can be, but at the end of the day, it's just swimming. And like, I should just chill out about it. Like, nobody's going to die if I don't swim well, you know, nothing's going to happen. There's no big, there's like the fate of the world is not depending on my shoulders or whether I swim fast or not. So I should just enjoy it and try and be the best person I can be. And I think, you know, coming to that mindset and like happily realizing that and just taking pressure off myself has like given me this way of just like, just kind of doing everything I can to be the best. But, you know, if it doesn't work out, sometimes that's what happens.
Self-awareness and weirdly, by you kind of letting go, it's allowed you more to breathe, even, you know, to move forward as a swimmer. How long did you lose your funding for?
Only a year. I was like really like fortunate in that sense, you know. I bounced back, like the season I guess I lost it, I bounced back. And I did have to rely on my mum for a bit, and that was what killed me. That was what I was so proud that I'd, you know, gone to university. I was receiving, you know, UK sport funding. I didn't have to rely on my parents, and I'm not judging anybody that does, because it is an expensive and difficult sport, and you know, funding is scarce. You know, we like the UK sport funding is great, but besides that, there aren't many pots of money to give out to swimmers. So I was really like proud that I had that, and then, you know, you lose that, and then you've got to rely on your mum again, and I didn't want to do that, but like, fortunately, it was only for like 6 or 7 months until I'd got back on it. And yeah, just I guess bounced back and arrived at a place where I can't quite believe like what's going on in my life, you know. Like, it's really positive, it's really happy, and I'm just happy that I got back in and started swimming again.
Yeah, and you're back now, and I often will tell an athlete after a victory or after anything fairly significant or having to make a big decision, you know, once you've made that decision or once that thing's happened, how will you feel 5 minutes afterwards, a day later, a week later, whatever. You've had time now to reflect on Tokyo. What are your takeaways? Where are you now? What do you think?
It was just a massive learning curve. Honestly, like, I didn't, it sounds really naive, and then like you're looking back on it now, I suppose it is, but I didn't realise it was going to be so different and so big. And I think that's like, for my first games, I was blown away by it. I wouldn't say it affected my performance, maybe, but I didn't underestimate, like, you know, this is the Olympics, like this is like what athletes young and old daydream about, and like getting to swim at that. Or but I don't know, I honestly can't explain it as well, because everything was dulled down, apparently. Obviously it was my first experience of it, so I wasn't sure. But like, I just know it's weird. Like, I can't explain it. I think I'll be able to hopefully explain it if I hopefully compete at Paris and be able to put my finger on it. But I think it's like certain things as well. I mean, there wasn't a crowd, which I think probably helped my comfort, because like with marathon swimming, there's not typically a crowd anyway. Like when we go to the World Cups and stuff, there won't typically be like a huge audience or anything like that. So that wasn't anything different for me. In terms of like family and friends coming out, I've never had that anyway, so that didn't stress me out. So I don't know why, like I came away from it and was suddenly like, oh my God, like, okay, yeah, I really felt that that was different, but I actually can't put my finger on what it was. So I hope I can explain it if I get to go to Paris.
And the actual event, you had some goals. I remember speaking to you beforehand about where you wanted to get to. And then you've had your race. Where do you, you know, have you got any reflections on that?
Honestly, there were a few times I wanted to stop, especially like towards the end when like I knew I'd been dropped. It was long, it was difficult, it was so hot, it was so warm.
When you mean dropped, is it like the leading kind of peloton type group have gone?
Yeah, they're gone, yeah. And
was there a moment you knew that had started to happen?
Yeah, you can see it happening. And, you know, you're swimming the same pace as them, but you're not on their feet. And that's what makes the difference, you know, you can't.
So like explain for me as a non-swimmer, on your feet, do you mean like on the back of the wheel almost for cycling?
Yes, or yeah, in drafting.
Drafting. So you're tucked in behind and you're getting and that, you're just, that benefit.
Yeah, of, exactly. Okay. Yeah, so when, basically, like for me, drafting is like a huge part of my race because I get so much benefit out of it. And, you know, you sit on someone's feet and you just glide along. And then even like a meter back from them is a lot less benefit. 2 meters back, you know, you might as well not be there. Well, that's not too bad, but you know, 5 meters back, there's basically no benefit. And I think at one point I ended up maybe 10 or 15 meters back, and I'm looking up and I'm like, I'm trying my hardest to get there, and I get there. Then that happened like two more times. And I was like, okay, this isn't good. Like I'm burning so much energy just to swim at the same pace as them. And yeah, eventually, you know, you get caught behind like one or two wrong people who have lost touch with them. And then you have to try and make up that gap. And when that happens to the fourth time, like there's only so much energy that you have. And I knew I was burning a lot trying to catch up with them. And I was like, okay, this is like the energy that I would typically use on the last lap. But it's one of those weird ones. I can't even remember where, at what point in the race it happened, but you suddenly look up and realise, like, oh, it's gone. Like, and one thing, I was watching the road cycling, I think it was at the very start of the Olympics, and Bernie, the open water lead, he's really into road cycling. And I was baffled by the fact that they were, like, 10, 15 minutes in front. And he was like, oh, yeah, no, there's a good chance they'll be caught. And I was just there, like, in open water swimming, like,
they're gone.
That's it. No, yeah, that is it. Like, that's very rare, very, very rare for a lead pack to catch. Like, a single swimmer who's broken away, good chance they'll be caught, but not like five or six swimmers who have broken and have like a 5 minute lead. Like, I've never heard of anyone catching that up, not in the recent years of open water swimming or marathon swimming. So, yeah, it's just that the moment you have the water involved, you know, you've got so much more to move through, like, obviously. And if you don't have people helping you out trying to bridge that gap, which often it doesn't happen like that. So yeah, stuff happens, I guess. It's really difficult to come away from it after you've, like, I've done everything for it. But I guess like I was saying before, like, I put everything into qualifying, and then I qualified, and it did take me like 2 weeks to get over qualifying. And I only had 6 weeks until I competed. So after those 2 weeks, I'd had like 4 weeks to like really pick myself up again. And I'm not gonna lie, it was difficult. I think Hector, I think he said he kind of struggled with that as well. I don't know if struggle's the right word, but you know, especially, you know, you put all of your heart and soul into focusing on qualifying. And the thing that we had spoke about after, so I think we had the race on 19th of June. I didn't know what was going to happen. So, you know, if I qualified, great, I'd be back into training. If not, I didn't know what the rest of my year looked like. And I did struggle with that a little bit. You know, I didn't dwell on that because obviously that was worst case scenario. But like, I didn't know where I'd be going, what I'd be doing. You know, I'd probably move in with my boyfriend for a while, but would be super down about things because I didn't qualify. So obviously that didn't happen, but then, you know, you've got to shift your mindset to, okay, now I'm racing at the Olympics. And that was one of the downfalls of qualifying so late. I literally think we were the last event to qualify. So yeah, it's another learning curve, I suppose, just being more prepared for that shift, because I was anticipating it, but I really didn't think it would knock me that hard.
And post-event, there's more of a kind of a side thing. I'm always interested in what athletes do immediately post-event when they don't have to worry about what they're eating. Maybe we'll answer that in a second. also some athletes, when they finished an event and they know that, you know, their next opportunity is 3 years away. There's obviously lots of major competitions, but that you can be in into that time. Some athletes are like, I want this tomorrow. And others would be like, right, I know now what I need to do over the next 3 years to get exactly where I want to get to in Paris. Where are you on that continuum?
Oh, man, I feel like I'm both. And it sounds like an easy answer. But I just finished and I was like, I want to press rewind and do that again. I was so annoyed at myself. But then, you know, it's like, okay, just chill out. Yeah, you got 3 years. A lot happens in 3 years. You never know what will happen. So you just got to, like, bide your time, like, try and get everything right and take your opportunities where you can get them. And yeah, there are a lot of competitions. Like, next season there are like 3 or 4 international competitions, like kind of major ones, which I could compete at. So because, like, everything's catching up from COVID, so, you know, there's a lot to focus on, there's a lot of good work to be put in, and a lot of exciting times ahead of me. And, you know, one, like, I it's weird because athletes never look at, like, a good swim as defining their career, but, like, I feel like we quite often look at, like, a bad swim or a bad competition as being potentially career defining. And, like, I just want to try and move away from that mindset, because for all the work that I've put in over 16 years, to be judged on 2 hours of it, it's quite harsh.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just need to, like,
you're never as bad as you think you are, you're never as good as you think you are.
Yeah.
And, you know, never have that consistency.
Yeah, especially in something like marathon swimming, where, like, anything can go wrong, you know. People can just be better than you on the day. Like, it is just that brutal. And I didn't feel great. Like, you know, you dive in and I was just like, I didn't feel like, you know, when you, it's that athlete thing, you get in or you start moving and it's just, it doesn't feel right. And I was like, okay, no, just ignore it. Like, I'm not putting my performance down to that at all, but, you know, I just, something didn't feel right. But
do you know now, looking back, what that might have come from?
Do you know, sometimes it's just not your day. And it's like really blasé, and I can't think of the right word, but it's really just like flippant, maybe. I don't mean to be flippant with it.
No, you don't sound it.
Yeah, it's just difficult to, sometimes, you know, you get in for a training session, you want it so bad, or maybe I wanted it too much. I don't know. Maybe I overthought it. I felt like I was quite relaxed, but I don't know.
One thing that we haven't mentioned, and I think, is, you know, I'd like to, is that you also, in the parachute regiment, they've got a part of the regiment called pathfinders. So they're the ones that jump off the plane first, secure the landing zone, and make safety for everybody else. Wow. They're the pathfinders. Now, you're also a pathfinder because you're the first black swimmer to represent Team GB. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's cool. It's definitely something that I'm, like, you know, really proud of, you know, to be part of history and part of culture in that sense. But then it's like on the flip side, like, a small part of me is like, it's a shame it had to be me. It's a shame it came as late as 2020/2021. But you know, we had a black man in 1980, Paul Marshall. He won a medal actually at the Moscow Games. He was the first black man from Britain. I'm the first black woman, and, you know, it's like a 40/41 year gap. So it's a shame, but then at the same time, I'm just happy it's happened. You know, I'm happy I'm getting opportunities like this to speak about it, you know, raise visibility, raise awareness, and you know, hopefully help change the landscape of this issue. And I really hope, you know, one day when I'm old and grey, like, touch wood, I get to old and grey, but, you know, I can look back on it and, you know, see a positive change that I've helped influence. And I really hope one day it'll just be like, oh, I can't believe that was an issue. Hopefully we'll look back in 50, 60 years and think, why didn't black people swim? Like, we've got all the evidence now to show that it shouldn't be an issue. Like, so I'm really hoping it gets to that point.
I think probably continuing on, like, in my world, both in kind of rugby and others, there's some origin stories of some black players that never got told. You know, players that made massive impact and played for England back a long, long time ago, and no one's ever heard of their names, and their stories haven't been told. And Fiji, where you know, a large part of my heart still resides, and 3 years living there, a lot of surfing goes on in Fiji, and a lot of black Fijian surfers are really on it. Like, they're pretty amazing, and they've got, you know, they that they use some surfboards that, you know, really don't look like they can.
They're bashed about and
they do some amazing stuff. And actually, again, like, some of the origin stories of some of the best surfers came from Africa and came from the islands. Mm-hmm. But no one knows those stories. Like, your story's public now. But do you think there's something around that origin stories? Because I hadn't heard about the swimmer that you had mentioned that had represented in 1980.
Yeah.
Do you think it's important that we make sure that he has a voice now? Is that where you think, you know, your story can help others?
I like to think so, definitely. And yeah, it's such a shame because Paul Marshall passed away, like, really sadly, I think in 2012, which is such a shame that we'll never get to hear it from his perspective and, you know, what he went through. Because, you know, I can't speculate how it was in the 1980s for, like, a black swimmer. It might have been the same as it is now. It might be completely different. I honestly have no idea. So, So I started talking about, like, my story and, you know, the issue of black people swimming in, like, 2019. And the first way I did it, I wanted my own words to be my own words, if that makes sense. I wanted to have it from my narrative and my voice first, because I guess I'm quite, like, with what I study, I'm quite aware of how, like, journalism works. And I'm not saying that any journalists who have covered my voice have displayed me in a way that I don't like or I'm annoyed about or is the wrong way, but, like, it's not me writing it. So I wanted that first opportunity to be my voice. So I published, I got an article commissioned in Gaudem magazine, and, you know, things really took off for me from there. You know, my agent, who I work with now, first got in touch with me, and, you know, when no one really saw potential in me, he saw a lot of potential in me, and I think he's really happy he did. You know, I didn't think I needed an agent at the time. I was like, I just, you know, I'm just a swimmer. Like, swimmers don't typically have agents, but that happened. A load of people picked up on my story, had a load of interview requests, and I've never had media training, never had formal media training, and like, everything that I've kind of learned and the way I speak, it's all been through, like, having these opportunities and just learning what works and what doesn't. And it's been like such a crazy ride, and it's kind of hard to believe, like, I'm at this point where, you know, I'm hopefully representing myself and the sport well. I can't represent all black swimmers because everyone's got their own story, but, you know, just wanting to let people know that if they want to swim, if they want to go learn to swim, you know, go do it. There's places, like, if anyone's racist to you, like, they shouldn't be. Like, it's not like that. The sport shouldn't be like that. And the whole myth and issue around black people in swimming not being able to float, I'm pretty sure is, like, complete pseudoscience.
I think it was
made up in, like, the 1950s in an article about zoo animals, which is just like staggering that it was published in, like, an academic article like that. But I'm pretty sure it's, like, myth. It's just a lie. You know, you've got myself who swims, Simone Manuel, like, incredible swimmer.
Yeah, incredible. What, two gold medals, four medals?
Yeah, like proper, like, good athlete. Yeah. And then, you know, Ali Atkinson, like, Michael Gunning, swims for Jamaica. You know, you've got some amazing black swimmers. And, you know, for the amount of black people who do swim to have such quality at the top, I think it's just telling of the potential of, like, our future in sport. So, yeah, I just want people to know, even if you just go learn to swim, that's cool too. Like, I think something that I've really had my eyes open to recently is that swimming and that sport can just be, like, an activity. It doesn't have to be a lifestyle. It doesn't have to be a career. Athletes often, like, I only looked at swimming as, like, a pathway to being, like, great and doing something, but it can just be, like, going to learn to swim 25 meters, and that's good. That's, like, you can go on holiday, you can go swim in the pool, you can go swim in the sea. You know, it doesn't have to be, like, something that you're super into all the time. Like, not everyone wants to take it that seriously, and that's fine.
Alice is already a brilliant role model, and it's evident that she's going to contribute even more over the coming years. Sitting down and listening to her, I could see where her energy to get up so early every day came from. To plough through the water, kilometre after kilometre, and do it all again the following day with a smile on her face is a drive that few of us have. I think some of this comes from the lightness she has around what she does. She takes it seriously, she prepares fully, but sees at such a young age the bigger picture and the perspective when the days get darker and shorter and colder and the workload gets heavier, will not just see her through, but will lift her up. Alice can be found on social media at Alice Deering X on Instagram and on Twitter, where you can follow her. You can virtually cheer her on in the big calendar of races she has coming up. You can see what she's up to and some of her processes. And any references or resources that were mentioned in this episode will be in the show notes, which can be found on the website benryan.co.uk/podcast. If you like this or any of the shows, then let me know on my social media, at Benjamin Ryan on Twitter or at Ben Ryan 7 with a number 7 sevens on Instagram. And feel free to also let me know who you would like me to chat to in the future. You can find all the shows on the major platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Amazon Music, and Google. And if you have a few moments, please leave a review and give a rating to help the show climb the podcast charts and let more people find out about it. This has been the Ben Ryan Podcast. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to bringing you another great chat next Wednesday.